You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, the latest stem cell news. This week, a research team from Harvard University announced that they've been able to reprogram adult stem cells to behave like embryonic stem cells. Their technique involves fusing an adult skin cell to a starter embryonic stem cell. But they say this isn't really ready for clinical use yet because the cells have a double dose of DNA, one from each of the cells. And so far, the researchers haven't figured out how to remove that extra genetic material, which makes the cell unusable except as a tool for basic research. If they can perfect this technique, which might take years, the researchers say it would provide an alternative to creating stem cells by therapeutic cloning. That's the technique that's at the center of the current political and ethical debate over embryonic stem cell research. Could this technique satisfy both scientists working to develop stem cell medicines and those people who are opposed to any research that requires the destruction of days-old embryos? We'll talk now with a stem cell researcher not involved with this research about the study out in today's issue of the journal Science and its implications. And if you'd like to join our discussion, of course, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Mark Noble is a professor of biomedical genetics and neurobiology and anatomy at the University of Rochester Medical Center in Rochester, New York. He joins us today from the campus there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Noble.
Thank you, Iris. Lovely to be back.
Was it that simple, fusing a embryonic stem cell with a skin cell?
Well, absolutely. The cell fusion is something that's been used in the scientific community for a long time. And it's actually critical in making monoclonal antibodies, which is one of the great revolutions in biology. And it's also been known for a long time that if you fuse two different cells together, one of them is going to be dominant. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's absolutely great about the way the Harvard group has behaved, and all credit to Dr. Egan and his colleagues for this, is the way they have been explicit that this is not a replacement for what's going on at the moment. This is teaching us that, yes, we can reprogram adult cells somehow, sometimes, and it's a step in a path to, as you say, eventually solving this debate. It doesn't do anything for all the folks who need help right now.
Mm-hmm. So when you smush these two cells together, you wind up with two sets of DNA, right?
Yes.
Why can't you just pluck one of them out?
You need a very small tweezers for that. It's not that easy. Obviously, there's a lot of people who are trying to figure out precisely how to do something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's possible, but, you know, Ira, it's critical to remember that all of these things are steps in a path. When we started in this field using fetal cells, for example, and fetal cells are great for this kind of work because the fetal animal is where you build tissue. And that's the job that the cells have. So that taught us what we needed to know to work with embryonic stem cells. Working with embryonic stem cells taught us things we needed to know to work with cells created by what's called therapeutic cloning, somatic cell nuclear transfer. That work taught us what we need to know for the Harvard group to do what it's doing. But these are all steps in a path. If you knock out the early steps, you never get to the late steps.
Mm-hmm. When this new kind of cell was, this embryonic stem cell-like cell was created, what are the characteristics that make you say it's an embryonic stem cell?
Simply that it can be caused to generate cells from the three different major cell groups of the body. So what they show in their paper is they have cells expressing something that you find in neurons and nerve cells, something that you find in other cells with something that you find in muscle cells, and other cells with something that you find in gut cells. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the earliest criteria, but that's a long way between there and an actual transplantation. You see, the problem is that in order to do a transplantation, you've got to have a gold standard that you aspire to in terms of recovery. For example, when we do a bone marrow transplant, any cell that does not reconstitute the functions of the blood and the immune system isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. So it's not just being able to get a cell in a test tube. Then you got to go through all the years of work of transplantation and showing that this is really a suitable cell for repair. Right now, the suitable cells for repair are the ones that we get, the ones that are most suitable for repair that are going into the clinic at some things like nervous system disorders are cells that are derived from fetal specimens that were aborted for personal reasons of the mother.
Mm-hmm. But this technology, because it has the DNA of a skin cell, a person's own DNA in it, if you can take it to its logical conclusion and work out those problems, means that it would not be rejected if it were put back in that person for therapy, right?
Absolutely. And you know, it's the scientists who are involved in this stem cell business, and I've been in this game for over 20 years now, we've all been moving in towards this direction. That the debate that's going on by those who are trying to block aspects of this research, they're not saying anything that we're not already trying to achieve. In fact, you know, the research at Harvard wasn't funded by people who were against embryonic stem cell research, right? It was funded by the scientists who are trying to get this to work, right? The embryonic stem cell scientists of today are going to be the adult stem cell scientists of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are figuring out how to get to this point where we're using our cells from our own bodies to treat our own diseases.
Mm-hmm. And even though this is designed to do away with the embryos, embryos were used in this experiment.
And in fact, some of the folks who are so excited about this research are the very ones who want to stand in the way of the embryonic stem cells that are needed for this research to occur. Isn't that ironic? And there's another irony that I think it's very important to point out, and it's a very sad one, that right now, the way this is going around the world is that those cells that are closest to the clinic for things like treating central nervous system disorders are cells derived from fetuses. All of us who are doing this kind of work want to move beyond that, but we see embryonic stem cells as absolutely necessary to do that. What those people who are fighting so hard to block embryonic stem cell research are going to do is they are going to turn fetal tissue into a commodity. And we, the scientists who are trying to get beyond that, are the ones who are most worried about that. That right now, as soon as something works and is useful in the clinic and useful for treating diseases, of course it's going to be used around the world. People are going to be lining up for treatments for whatever one of these horrible diseases it might work for, whether it's Parkinson's or diabetes or anything else you can think of. Well, at that point, if the scientific community has been prevented from creating the alternatives, then those people who have stood in the way of the science, who have tried to block the new science from happening because they hate embryonic stem cell research, they're going to be the ones who turn fetal tissues into marketplace commodities. I happen to disagree with that happening, but they're the ones that are going to do that.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can go to the phones. Got a couple of calls. Sean in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Sean.
Hey. We're still suffering from brownouts here in Fort Lauderdale.
Boy.
We dodged the bullet last night, so I'll try to make this brief. It's regarding the language of and hopefully trying to sway the issue, sway the attention to this. Instead of saying embryonic stem cell research, why don't they say something like blastocystoidal stem cell research? I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, if it goes any further past a blastocystoid, it actually becomes differentiated cells. And what I wanted to ask you, something I've wondered for a long time is, I don't really know how to say it, but I've heard this on an episode of Nova, I think it was, and they were talking about how they take all the DNA material out of the egg, and then they put the donor DNA in.
Right.
And then that's what makes it a cloned embryo, and therefore there is no. Conception. Therefore, these people, these extremists who are trying so hard to block this, when they say life begins conception, Therefore, if we say cloned blastocytal worms, you know, stem cell research, that sort of blows it out of the water.
So Sean, there's a lot of good points that you raised. So, you know, so let's talk about the blastocyst just for a second.
Yeah.
So the blastocyst is a simple ball of 100 cells. It doesn't have any nerve cells or muscle cells or gut cells. It is how any species that has sexual reproduction starts to build an embryo.
Yeah, it's just embryo.
And if it doesn't implant in the wall of the uterus, in mammals, we don't even call it a pregnancy.
Yeah.
So to me, as a scientist, I have to say, it's a ball of cells. It's the way mammals, for the blastocyst, it's the way mammals make more mammals.
Yeah.
It's a step along the path. And in fact, in England, what has been decided, I think very courageously and intelligently, is to say that the scientists there can generate embryonic stem cells and blastocysts, and they stop at the stage before you generate the different cell types of the body.
Have they been able to achieve this yet?
Sure.
They've done this, so why don't we just call it either clone blastocytal stem cell research? And see, when people think embryo, especially these extremists, they picture something with a spine and a head and arm buds and a tail, you know?
Yeah, I know. And, you know, we in the scientific community, that's right, and we don't think that way, because an embryo is different from a fetus. You don't have a fetus until it implants in the uterus of the uterine wall and starts developing very specifically. But, you know, I think the language is important, but I think what's much more important is where's the support for the research going to come from?
Yeah.
So in the United States, we have been incredibly fortunate in having the National Institutes of Health, which is one of the greatest discovery machines in the history of the planet, and frankly, one of the greatest wealth creators in the history of the United States. The whole biotechnology industry would not exist were it not for the support of the National Institutes of Health in the university systems. Well, if the NIH does not get the extra money it needs to support this kind of research, the money has to come from somewhere. And one of the things that has really been very frustrating in this debate, let's say, is that those who are so opposed to embryonic stem cell research appear to be doing zero, so far as I can tell, to raise the funds to fund alternative approaches. So my challenge to them every time I'm in these debates with them is to say, you go out and you raise $100 million, and spending all of your time trying to be obstructive, go out and work with your groups, raise $100 million to create a funding initiative to support the kind of research you think is important, and the scientists will do the work. But I have yet to have a single person take me up on that challenge. Mm.
Thanks for calling, Sean. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flader. We're talking about stem cell research with Mark Noble, professor of biomedical genetics and neurobiology and anatomy at the University of Rochester Medical Center in New York. Our number 1-800-989-8255. There's two bills up on Capitol Hill that have been talked about, getting ready to be. I think the House one passed, the one in the Senate is still waiting to be voted on. And they've been saying maybe if we wait a long enough time, there will be alternatives. I know the president's bioethics chair was on here talking about the alternatives. He mentioned one of these, this alternative, when he was on here a few weeks ago, as a possibility of making the point moot. Do you think that legislators are going to look at this kind of research and say, hey, maybe we shouldn't relax the restrictions that President Bush put on it in 2001?
Well, first, sir, I want to remind you that one of the things that Dr. Cass said, which I thought was a very, very important statement, was that these issues should not be legislated. Now, there, one of the bills that is being thrown around is the Brownback bill, which states precisely that if you need to have some kind of therapy that would be achieved by somatic cell nuclear transfer research, it would ban it in the United States, and if you go to Canada or Korea or Germany or somewhere where the research is being done and have that work done using your own cells to treat your own diseases, and you come back to America, you're guilty of importing the product of human cloning, and you go to jail for 10 years. That's one of the bills that these folks are trying to push through. So they're trying to impose upon everybody in the United States this restrictive practice that prevents those who have different opinions about when life begins from benefiting from one of the greatest medical advances we've had since antibiotics and vaccination.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Helen in St. Louis. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was just wondering if you are going to have someone on from the other side of the fence on this issue.
What side is that?
Well, the anti-human cloning side.
Well, Helen, in the last show, for my 15 minutes, Leon Cass got at least a half hour. So I have another 15 minutes. I have this 15 minutes due to balance the slate here. But it's good to have these as debates.
We have a whole hour today, I think.
No, we had Leon Cass on, had 40 minutes to talk about
that's
this side
right.
of it. So, and he was he's the one we were just talking about, the president's head of the president's bioethics committee.
I see. But you know what? I think that you know that you're mischaracterizing the other side. I mean, you're calling us extremists. You're saying that we believe that embryos are have tails. I mean, you're all kinds of things.
Well, Helen, I said nothing like that.
Helen, that was the caller. Helen, why don't you tell us what your feelings are then?
Well, I mean, I just feel that there's the potential for human life. If a clone can grow into a human person, that's how we all started, and that's what I think we should protect.
Okay, Helen, that is a belief that you have, and I understand it, and I respect it. Okay, I respect it, but I don't agree with it. Just as an acorn is not the same thing as an oak tree, I don't think that a blastocyst is the same as a human being. And I have to say that my concern, as someone who does stem cell research, my primary concern is with the millions of people with horrible diseases who may benefit from advances that come out
so
of this research.
Wait,
let me finish, Helen.
Okay.
I do not think that living, breathing people do have priority over balls of cells. I do not equate a blastocyst with a human being. Moreover, those who are against this research are also neglecting the fact that every year 100,000 blastocysts approximately are thrown away from in vitro fertilization clinics.
Dr. Noble, we got to go.
Okay, Ira, thank you.
We'll we've talked about this a lot. We'll be certainly talking about a lot more, getting all the sides in as we go. Dr. Mark Noble of University of Rochester, thank you very much. Short break, we'll be right back. Don't go away.